I'd like to call to order a work session of the Board of Education. There's one item on tonight's agenda, and as you see, there is approval of this agenda, so I entertain a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
Move to approve. Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Ms. Eagle. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries unanimously. So tonight is a continuation of budget development and a discussion on our budget and opportunity to ask additional questions, search for additional information if that's what you need. Monday night at our 5:30 meeting, we will go over the line item by line item budget and then be ready to come back I think on Wednesday night for our public hearing and first reading of the budget. So I'll kind of kick things off. I learned a lesson, I don't care, and I don't know how many years ago this has been, but I was a relatively new board member at that time, and I came in with all these thoughts about how I could cut this or how we could do this, and I thought I was really ready prepared until I learned and re-emphasized an important definition of reoccurring dollars and non-reoccurring dollars and how to handle that, and also that if I wanted to reduce, and I'll just pick them out, if I wanted to reduce $100,000 from the budget, it was very difficult to do it $5,000 and $10,000 at a time. So those are some of the dilemmas that we still face as we look at this budget. I know, and I'm sure board members will speak to this, but I know that this board as a whole, one of the things that we would like to do when we finalize this budget is come up with a plan to be able to give our teaching staff and staff a percent raise. And I don't, when I say percent, I don't mean 1%, 2%, or 3%. I just mean a percent raise. So I know that will be in the minds of how we can figure out how to do that within the budget that we have. And if that means going to the city, requesting an additional amount to be able to do that. So with that said, I'll open the discussion for any board member who would like to make a comment, ask questions, and we'll go from there. Mr. Eby.
Yes, at the end of the last meeting, I had some questions with regard to those added positions that I'd like, if you want to go through those.
Can we put the, let's clarify some things.
Okay, I'll go ahead and put this slide up just to refresh us what we're looking at. And in the title we talked today, we probably should have changed it here, where it says new staffing. I'm going to have Mr. Lay start off. It really should be new impact to the general fund, not necessarily new staffing. And that particularly pertains to the preschool position. So, Mr. Lay, do you want to take the first three there?
Yes, sir. I'd be glad to. The first three preschool positions, preschool teacher assistant, preschool secretary, those are not new positions. And we realize that's not real clear. Those are existing positions, but basically Title I has been telling us for several years now that we could not continue to use the amount of money from Title I in the preschool that we have been using over the years. We have funded a large percentage of preschool with Title I funds. If you add to that mix, we also had a $100,000 cut in Title I that has presented another problem. So basically, the preschool, they're losing Title I funds. These three positions were the positions that we identified that we would no longer pay from Title I funds, and we would start paying from the general fund. So it is an increase to the general fund, but it is, but they are not new positions. Is that clear?
So basically what you're saying is that because we had a reduction of $100,000 from Title I, if we want to maintain the same service, the same number of students that we have in the preschool, and we have to pick that up in the general fund.
Yes, sir. And it's not just that reduction. Also, at the same time, we are being, I won't use the word forced, but highly encouraged in a timely manner. And they have given us a grace period to start basically dividing Title I funds and being more equitable with what we're spending in our elementary program. So we had the $100,000 cut, but we're also sending more funds from Title I. So basically the preschool is taking a tremendous hit as far as Title I funding.
Let me just follow with that just to make sure. The cut has, we get a pot of money from Title I.
Correct.
And then it's incumbent on the Oak Ridge School District to determine how that Title I money will be distributed, or are we told how we should be incurred? Are we encouraged to distribute that money in a certain manner?
Yes and no. It's going to be a mix. I'm going to let Dr. Beckendorf address that question.
Okay, I would like to start on the answer to that question, but I did ask Dr. Williams to make sure she was here tonight to help with the explanation, because she's directly supervising Title I now.
Okay, before you start in that direction,
yes.
Then let's, just for the sake of having this so we know, give us a short explanation of exactly what Title I money is,
okay,
and where it comes from.
Okay. Title I money is money that comes from the federal government. Interestingly enough, it originates through K-12, and that's an important point. But the funding comes from the federal government, and it is intended to support economically disadvantaged students. So when
is it the same as Head Start or different than Head Start?
Different than
right.
Head Start.
I wanted to make that clear so people understand that.
It is different than Head Start. So in the history of Oak Ridge Schools, when the preschool first started, Title I funding mostly was used at the preschool level. There came a point at which we were told that's not okay. We need to make sure that we're not only serving students in preschool, but when they leave preschool. That was when Willowbrook came on as a Title I school. Willowbrook became a Title I school first because they have the highest free and reduced lunch rate out of all of Oak Ridge schools, aside from the preschool, out of all of our K-12 schools. Then about 3 years ago, we started hearing from the state, hey, this is interesting. So you're saying that all of your preschool students need help, need assistance from Title I, but only the kindergartners who go to Willowbrook receive continued services. How does that make sense? What about the kids who are in the preschool who are zoned Woodland or zoned Linden or zoned Glenwood? Does that mean that they no longer need support when they leave the preschool? Well, obviously, the answer is they still need support. So we were pretty much told that we needed to go on in the process of having Title I schools in all of our elementary schools. So at that point, we were targeted assistance in Glenwood, Linden, and Woodland, which was fairly complex as far as how you could spend the money and things like that. But last school year, we were targeted assistance in those three schools and then Title I for preschool and Willowbrook. Are we good so far? Okay. But the expectation was that we become Title I in all of our elementary schools. Starting this school year, we are. We have all four of our elementary schools are Title I schools. So that was great. So as you can see, we were following the guidance that we had received. We were transitioning to doing what we were supposed to be doing. But then the state still says, but there's a disproportionate amount of Title I dollars going to the preschool as compared to the elementary schools. So there's a certain amount of leeway that we have. There's a certain amount of local control that we have. But there's also a certain amount of we submit the budget to the state and it can be approved or it can be sent back for modifications. And until they approve it, you know, we can't draw down funds and we can't use the money. So in order to satisfy their expectations, you know, we have to start shifting how our funding model is with Title I dollars. It's important to note that the intent of Title I funds is supplementary. It is not supposed to be that you base the existence of a school upon the reception of Title I dollars. It is supposed to be supplementary to what is already being received. So the fact that the school could close, for example, if it didn't receive Title I dollars, would be a situation of saying that this is not supplementary. So Kelly could get in much more detail, but that's the general gist, is that the expectation is that we have a more equitable distribution of Title I dollars, and that there is some kind of participation of the general fund in the preschool to justify the fact that our federal money is supplementary.
So then, as opposed to being able to serve more students at a preschool level who will then move into through K-12, we're being asked to serve less students in the pre-K so we can serve those students or follow those students as they move in through K through 12 based on the amount of money we have, which was cut by $100,000, which we have no say-so one way or the other on that.
No, the cut happened across the state. That wasn't like, hey, Oak Ridge, we're taking that.
Right.
The cuts were across the state. I would say that the state would not agree quite with what you said.
Well, I'm sure.
In their mind, it's not that they're serving fewer students, because Title I money is intended to be supplementary. So in their mind, they're serving more students because we have more students in our elementary schools than we have in our preschool. So in their minds, they're actually serving more kids, not less.
But my, and I know this is just you and I having a conversation, but yes, my argument would be if we have less money, we're not serving more students. Right?
Yes.
Perhaps in some areas we're reducing services
to,
but we're actually increasing with fewer services the number of students that will receive those services.
Well, and obviously we don't have an impact on how that direction is. We have to follow what we're told to do.
Yes, sir.
And
it's an interesting situation, because they will say you have local control, and we do to an extent, but we need to follow their guidelines or else our funding applications will not be approved.
And so we've got to figure out how to do best do that within what we have the capabilities of doing.
Yes, sir.
I have a question.
So,
percentage-wise for funding the preschool, split between Title I, Head Start, and our,
state initiative.
Other monies that we get from the city and the state, et cetera. How do those split out? What percent comes from Title I? What percent comes from Head Start? And what comes from our general fund?
It's actually a split between Head Start, Title I, and the state pre-K dollars. It's not quite a third, but it's close. The two big ones are Head Start and Title I, and then there's like $450,000 out of the state initiative money.
So all the preschool is paid for by dollars outside? They're not taking...
It used to be, but now we're explaining the change.
Right.
And so for FY18 budget, the total impact on the general fund, new impact on the general fund is $215,000. So picking up the positions, in the one-time money you saw the contracted services, and then we also picked up the transportation for preschool.
Thank you.
Ms. Agle, I think you were next.
Did you want
Yeah, we didn't go through that table. We're still going this table.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. The next one, the career exploration teacher, basically, that was what we used to would have called team leaving, home ec. The name has changed over the years, but we are transitioning, and this happened at Jefferson this year with the 0.6 position. We're transitioning basically to a career exploration teacher. We're just trying to do a better job basically working with our students during the 4 years of middle school to let them see what opportunities are out there in regards to careers. We're also trying to do a better job communicating with those students some of the opportunities, especially in CTE, that they will experience at Oak Ridge High School. We use the term sort of, we want, you know, to offer the same program in both schools, and that's what it's all about. It's not necessarily just because Robertsville has a 1.0 position, we want Jefferson to have a 1.0 position, but we do want students at both middle schools to have the same opportunities. And if you look at the four-year program, 5 through 8, the only way for us to attain that is basically to at least have one staff member at both schools basically committed to teaching the same program. So that's basically why we're making that recommendation.
Question, is the program being successful at Jefferson?
Yes, it is being successful. In to be completely candid, we were not as successful at Robertsville with that transition this year, but there are changes in place to make that happen. But it's just become, you know, they're still doing some cooking and some of the programs that you would have done in a team living classroom, but they're also heavily involving technology. And once again, you've got students, especially sometimes from lower income homes, that they truly are not aware or well informed of what opportunities are out there and what careers they might be best suited for. And you look at our key 7, we want students to leave this school system with a path. So this is one way that we'll work to do that. So.
But if you had 0.6 at Jefferson and they were successful in 1.0 at Robertsville, if you took those two together, you might could do 0.8 at each and not have to add this position?
Well, in doing that, what you do is you limit the grades that this person can reach, because, I mean, there's only so many periods during the day. So in order for this individual to be able to work with all grades 5 through 8, that's why the 1.0 is necessary. Basically, the students at Robertsville, due to being full time, that person can work with all 4 grades. That's not the case at Jefferson.
Sorry, just to clarify, success is based on student interest, student engagement. What is the success metric for that particular class?
What I'm basing success on this year is we basically changed the curriculum for the program, and we just have documentation that basically the curriculum was followed. It was better implemented at Jefferson versus at Robertsville this year. So it was tough for the transition to go from being team living to being the career exploration position. So we just had a tough time with that transition.
And it's a pretty major transition from what it was until what it's going to. And much of this is CTE, yes, driven by the state. This is a best practice to do this at lower grades to expose our kids to the pathways that are available across the country and also specifically to what they're going to head into in the high school. So to get them more in tune and exposed to these things at an earlier time in their lives that they can start doing some planning as they transition in. So it does directly relate to our keys and getting kids more engaged about what their pathways are going to be when they hit high school and post high school. And we could, after this, Mr. Lay Tracy, we could get the curriculum that's been revamped. That might help a lot if you see what it was and what it's going to. That might be very helpful. So maybe make a note to have Holly send that.
You go through the rest.
Rest of them.
Yes, of course. Next, we're all excited about this, our NJROTC program, but once again,
you don't need to go through that one. I understand.
Okay, I thought that one might be okay. Mm-hmm. All right, and I'm going to let Dr. Beckendorf go from here.
Okay, the next one is Reading Coach. This is part of the Read to Be Ready initiative that has been occurring across the state. Read to Be Ready is a statewide initiative with the intent to improve literacy outcomes in elementary schools across the state, and of course aligns with our Key 1. This opportunity actually opened up last school year. They're called Read to Be Ready coaches, and they go through very intensive professional development with other Read to Be Ready coaches across the state. Our district qualifies for 3 Read to Be Ready coaches, but the state is providing funding for the training and the travel to the training locations and about $5,000 for materials, but they're not actually providing FTE. So we were able this last year to have our halftime reading coordinator audit the trainings in order to determine if the trainings were effective and would be something that would be very impactful to Oak Ridge schools. As she audited the trainings, she learned that the trainings are incredibly beneficial. And so what we're asking to do is basically have her be a halftime reading coordinator and a halftime reading coach. And the reading coach portion would be part of the Read to Be Ready program across the state, in which she would work directly with teachers in their classes, coaching them on best practices in literacy. We can take .25 of this out of Title I, and so it would impact the general fund by .25. We have reduced other professional development lines in order to account for this, but that's the idea behind this position. It's in support of our literacy initiative.
Tracy, can you say a little bit about the focus on improvement science and Carnegie and all that?
Yes, so we are part of the Tennessee Early Literacy Network, in which we're going through a whole process of improvement science, which aligns very well with our continuous improvement focus in Oak Ridge schools, but it even goes further. It's kind of like action research, in which we're working with other districts, we're working with the state of Tennessee, we're working with the Carnegie Foundation, learning about improvement science, how we can see what's going on, how we can see what we're doing well, but also what we need to work on. So we just want to mobilize some resources so that we can benefit from this improvement science straight to the classroom in an effective way, and in a way that is able to learn from other people across the state as well.
That's it.
Oh, do you want me to go to the next one?
No, I'm fine.
I think we're good. We got the impact of that one at our. Any additional questions with this particular slide that you see from anyone?
My question, it's not on this slide, but it's on the page 2 under position additions. The +2 athletic director supplements at the middle schools.
You want to speak to that, Mr. Lee?
Yes, I'd be glad to.
Is that on a slide? Yes. It's a previous slide, is it not?
Yes, previous.
Yep.
I guess I'll start out by saying if you compare the number of administrators we have at the middle school in Oak Ridge in comparison to whether it be Anderson County, Knox County, we are understaffed. I mean, there are middle schools that have 3 and 4 assistants that are smaller schools than our middle school. So we realize that we really have put a tremendous burden on our 2 administrators at our 2 middle schools. And of course, and I've lived that life. But one thing they have done to try to reduce the workload for the administrators, they basically have a staff member that is serving in the capacity of an athletic director. Well, you think about a person, once again, they're getting a teaching salary, and in some cases, there is an extra planning period that goes with that. But they're basically managing the athletic program at the middle schools. We just decided, of course, it was recommended by the principals that we pay them a supplement, and we're supporting that, and we have recommended that, and we're basically looking at $6,000 per school, which would be a $12,000 increase in the budget.
This is $4,000. This is $4,000.
Oh, was it just $4,000?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, anyway, so we're looking at $8,000, but for the work they're doing, athletics at the middle school, you have got football, volleyball, basketball, cheerleading, track, cross country, and our athletic directors, they're attending many of the ball games, and a lot of nights you have ball games going on when you have concerts, PTO, whatever, and that allows the administrators to be there, but they have really taken on a tremendous amount of work, and we're basically giving them nothing. So we wanted to do something to show our appreciation and put that in the budget for this year. So basically they're serving the same capacity as Mr. Mullins would at the high school, but with no supplement. And this does take some of the workload off of the administration.
I think you have to ask a question though. What about, I just use robotics as an example. I mean, they work every night from how long to how long?
I think they would officially tell you that they work from 5 to 9. They will admit to working as late as midnight.
But for what, I mean, how long of the year?
Months.
Right.
At the very minimum, from the first week in January until bag and tag, which is the end of February, but then you have the competitions. Yes. So it only really intensifies. So you're really talking about up through mid-April. And
they don't get anything, do they?
No.
I would just add, we do have a lot of people that don't get something for the time that they put in the district. I think in this case, we're trying to say, you know, we wouldn't have an assistant principal go over taking robotics if the robotics coach didn't want to do it anymore. You know, that just wouldn't happen. And I guess in this case, going back to Mr. Lay's comments, the reasoning here was if we have an activities director at the middle school say, I'm just done with this, I got to be home with kids, then all of that work shifts to the administrator, and that means they're not in the classroom, they're not doing the instruction, they're not. So we felt it warranted that because of that reason. But there is time in the future. Dr. Lee won't want me to even say this, but we could review all stipends, but I'm guessing that cost won't go down. It will increase when we have that conversation.
Yeah, I understand that, but I guess your comment that, you know, if they didn't have the robotics coach wouldn't go, then, you know, somebody wouldn't go take his place, and then I guess the robotics would just go away. And I look and see how many students get scholarships out of robotics. A bunch of them. I mean, you know, I think it's important for us just to recognize that there are a lot of other things other than athletics. So, and I'm a big athletic supporter, but I think that some of these other programs that we have, you know, chess clubs and stuff like that, that we have staff that stays after and does that. I mean, I think we just need to somehow figure out a way to recognize them all.
So, I would like to respond to that, if that's okay. If you recall, just a couple of years ago, our extended contract funding got zeroed out from the state, and that extended contract funding was exactly what helped support the robotics program, the Technology Student Association, and a variety of other kinds of after-school activities. And Mr. Lay had actually, in some of our earlier drafts, had tried to include some of that in this year's budget, and it didn't work out. But we definitely are cognizant that there are a lot of people who are putting in a lot of hours after contract to support our students, and we're very appreciative of that work. It is a shame that the extended contract funding was zeroed out.
And we did lose staff that were heavily involved because the time commitment that they had been doing, the compensation certainly didn't cover an hourly wage that was sufficient. It was more or less, I'm getting a little stipend for my time that I'm putting in here. That's something that at some point in time that we as a board might want to take a look at, just to see, are we compensating the right people for doing the right things? And I know that would be a very difficult discussion, because then you've got to start associating quality with X event or X club or X, and it becomes difficult. So, but that, you know, that certainly can be a very worthwhile discussion that we can have. Karen?
I was just going to add that when, over time, the extended contract money was reduced, and then eventually it was eliminated. And the year it was eliminated, we did add in a sum of money at the level it was when it was eliminated. So it's never been added back to the point where it was during its flourishing time, but we did add some back to try to compensate for that.
So where did that money go?
It's still in the budget.
Does it add stipends for some of these, you know, maskers or some of these programs or what? Intercession.
Yes, the money is being used for intercessions at this time. So that's how we're paying those salaries. And I actually requested the time that basically was phased out, we were spending approximately $82,000. That's what I requested, of course, in this budget. There's no way that can be approved, but that was basically the reinstate. And rather than call it extended contract, we would call it extended learning. But you know, we do have just numerous staff members that are not being compensated, that are going far beyond what they're expected to do. So at some point, that would definitely be a good direction to go. And that's why once we made this recommendation, because, you know, we are, we do have a quite extensive athletic program at the middle schools, and, you know, and that's something we will continue with, and it would be helpful if we had someone to help manage that, so.
Okay, that gets us through that particular slide. Other questions, comments from board members? Karen?
I just sent you all an email that shows the percentage of funding for the preschool that you asked, Bob. I just did a quick calculation.
Yeah. Chairman Fillower, back on the supplemental stipends, because I just want to make sure, how is that work being staffed today at the middle schools?
Basically, we have two volunteers. We have Jason Nussbaum at Jefferson Middle School that's taking on those duties, and we have Mr. Scott Hinton at Robertsville Middle School that's taking on those duties. And once again, good possibility they will continue to some degree. I mean, at some point, they will determine they cannot continue that kind of time. But you've got two gentlemen who are just doing a great job with it, and once again, they're taking that load off the administration. But just being handled by volunteers who love athletics at this time. So,
just an add-on question. Of all the things that we're talking about that are extracurricular outside the classroom activities being managed by people who aren't being compensated, how many of those things would fall to the administrator if they weren't being covered in some other way?
I would say this is one of the major ones. I mean, as far as tutoring, Lego leagues, chess clubs, I mean, administrators normally do not sponsor those. So that's really what makes us a little bit different is, once again, if we don't have those two gentlemen, the workload goes primarily to the assistant principal.
Are there different legal expectations around managing the sports programs as opposed to managing some of the clubs like Lego League and TSA and those?
I'm not sure how to address that question, but I do know as far as board policy, we are required to have a school representative at all athletic events. So we are required to have a person. If you have the chess club, basically that school person goes with them, but we don't necessarily have an administrator or someone that affects. So
the TSSAA doesn't govern middle school sports?
They do, and they do require an administrator to be there. So basically with that administrator required to be there, this athletic director can be a designee. So. But in most cases, our administration, they're still showing up for athletic events. This is a person, you know, they're basically making sure we have the referees, making sure we have transportation, a lot of work that takes place behind the scenes, working with basically managing the budget to make sure that basically our athletic funds are being spent correctly.
Okay. I'm still struggling. I think the way we all are, our administrators, and we looked at some of the data the other night that you guys presented as part of the, our administrators are compensated really ahead of a lot of our teaching faculty, at least on average, right, is where our state ranking is by what we looked at the other evening. And I think as things that are mandatory, that they're governed by the state, whether it be TSSAA or state guidance and from TSBA policy guidance, et cetera. There's a part of me that says, you know, for an administrator, you're being compensated. And so if that role falls to you, then that's what you're being compensated to take care of. I know that's probably not a popular attitude. I think And so forgive me for being politically incorrect on that, but I think it's pretty tough to compare, because I think we do have a lot of people spending a lot of hours. And so where does somebody's heart and time have less value than somebody else's heart and time? And I think that gets really sticky really quickly. So
and this is,
forgive me for struggling openly and publicly with that, but I am.
And it is a choice. I mean, but I think what Mr. Lay is saying, and I was in a meeting a week ago where there was a school of 350 students in Knoxville, and they had five administrators. So that workload is incredibly spread out in an organization like that. If you take Robertsville, for instance, you have to make a choice. Do you want DT doing RTI work, working with teachers, making classroom visits, or spending half his day scheduling referees while Garfield runs the whole show? So, I mean, those are the differences when you talk about number of people that could take on those responsibilities. And they could, and DT would, and Mr. Layton would, but then we're now choosing to say, you know, forget all that other stuff, do this over here. So that's the struggle point. And this is no judgment on who's doing what or cares about. I mean, it was purely a, you know, what do we want our people doing during the school day, instructional wise, and that's why I think you're seeing the recommendation. And as Bruce said, you know, 80,000 didn't make it to this budget to reward some of those other things because of what you see. We can sure put that back in, but then we get into, okay, where's the next 80,000 getting cut from? So that's kind of the point we're at. Did you have anything else, Mr. Lewis?
No, I would just say you really worded that absolutely correctly. It goes back to priorities. You know, mm-hmm. we want our principals to be instructional leaders, you know, and if we can just take a few things off of them, that's very helpful, because once again, they're just busy. And if you have a person doing 100% of athletics, that's just time that could be better spent doing other things throughout the day. So
no, I completely agree. As far as the content of the work that's being required, I get that. I think it's just tough, because I think it does get into a somewhat subjective values judgment at some level. And that's just tough. So thank you.
And rest assured, it would happen regardless. Our principles, it would happen. We have great administration. So.
Other questions? Is there any additional information we received, and thank each of you that helped get this to us from the last meeting? There were a number of questions and that we received information on that is very helpful. Are there additional questions that any of the board members feel like they need answered? Obviously, our biggest effort with the budget comes Monday when we look at it line item by line item and take opportunities to find magic money or delete or change or whatever the case may be. And but between now and Monday is most important, if there are questions that we need to have answered, to get those out so we can have that information. Mr. Eby.
Yes, Karen, the spending this year allowed us to fund extra grade in the Access 20, Access Oak Ridge program, correct? Our goal is to get all students computers K through 12.
We have an elementary technology committee that just started, mm-hmm. And we will be meeting regularly and analyzing, you know, best practices and kind of the vision of elementary. And we will provide a recommendation to the board by December. For right now, as a rough draft thought, and to just keep it like that, I think something like 1-to-1 in grades 3 to 4 might make sense, although not necessarily taking it home, like mm-hmm. potentially your fourth grade students could earn that privilege and then maybe take them home second semester to prepare for middle school, something like that. But about 1-to-1 grades 3 and 4 are more heavily tested grades. But then K through two could really look different, and it might not be a one-to-one. It might be a one-to-two, or it might be a really different model. So I would say I would envision some movement to the elementary level, and that we'll have a little better idea of kind of what our suggestions will be specifically by winter break.
Okay, so the reason I was asking the question is I think y'all have done, continue to do a excellent job throughout the year. You're very conservative in saving money, and at the end of the year, we had these funds for this year. And I know you can't guarantee that we'll have those funds for next year, but even with where we are right now, I haven't looked at it, with those extra funds paying for those computers, how do you expect that we're going to end the year, and have you calculated that in that addition into the new balance fund balance additions, or can you tell me where you think you'll be?
Yeah, typically what we do is after each payroll, we look at where we are, because it was in the salary and benefit line items that we were able to come up with the money in the past. And I assumed that all of the other budget line items that are not salaries and benefits will be spent. So other than things like utilities that we don't know until the last, we get the last bill and it's too late then mm-hmm. to do anything. So Dr. Borchers and I had a discussion about that about mid-year, and we felt like there was going to be an amount of approximately $750,000 that we were going to be adding to fund balance if we didn't spend it. And because of the nature of the amount of fund balance we've been using to balance the budget and the unknown future, we felt like that money should go towards fund balance at the time. When we were looking at it, we felt like it should go towards fund balance for the future year. So that $750,000 is included in the information I gave you the other night for the projection for FY18, and we'll be turning around okay. and using that.
So your overall fund balance calculation that you gave us includes what you expect to have left over
it
this
does.
Year? Okay, I just want to understand. Thank you.
Okay.
And on that note, though, I think we are a little worried about the coming year with fund balance being where it's at. And, you know, we've been making some mid-year purchases so that we can have tech ready to roll out day one for students. And, you know, last year we did get the one-time money from the city, $538,000, and I think $425,000 of that went to the lease. Is that not correct, Karen? So that's helpful for those one-time purchases or paying off a lease. But without that, I'm concerned that, and I don't, my elementary folks aren't here, but I'm concerned that we may not be able to do that without additional funding.
If we were to get that one-time funding again, if the city decided that they were going to give us $525,000 again without increasing the maintenance effort, be one-time funding, do we have enough non-reoccurring funds that we could put it toward that? And
not really. It would actually put us in a worse position as far as we're already going to be starting the next year with $1.3 million that we've assigned to one-time expenditures this year. We're 82% to 84% salaries and benefits. We are a people organization. That's recurring money. So it's very difficult for us to keep operating in this back mode. Probably the money would best be used for a one-time purchase like technology.
If they funded us the $525,000 or whatever it is, because as it's stipulated right now that it is one time, it is not maintenance of effort, we could not put that toward salary increase for our
no.
teachers.
No, it would not be a smart
thing
to do.
I think
that's
a real important point out there, Mr. Reporter. You got that? In other words, you know, if the city comes and says, "Oh yeah, well we've had a good year and we had the same funds that we had last year and we're going to give it to you again this year, but it still is only one-time funding," that does not translate into a raise for the staff.
It does not. In essence, any organization that is adjusting their employee salaries is committing to maintenance of effort for future years. because they're not going to take that salary and benefit away the next year. So maintenance of effort is a common occurrence in organizations that are people oriented.
So isn't when the city gives themselves a raise, they're increasing their maintenance of effort, right?
That's right. That's my point.
That's a very good point, Mr. Reporter.
So to narrow that down just a little bit, if this budget stands as it is now, the only way we can give a percentage, a 1% raise, which is $382,000, somewhere there. The only way we can give that raise, if this budget stands as it is right now, the city has to increase their maintenance of effort by $382,000 for us. Is that what, that's what you're saying?
Unless you choose to cut people.
Well, that's where it would be next. If that's not going to occur, the only way that we can do that in this budget is to find a place in the budget where we can come up with that money, and based on the high end of what our budget is made up of, the only real choice is to cut people.
Right. There's a couple of other issues, but they are not easy choices. There's like the support for the preschool transportation, that's a service that could be looked at. And so, you know, we would have to pick through the budget, but I would say generally your description is correct in that it's going to be salaries.
So this is what I would like for you to do, is I want you to go back and look very, very, very closely and make sure what you told us, you know, that it, we cannot have any, if we got the extra $500,000, that we have no other funds to use that for other than something that, you know, that we can't switch it around like we did last year. Mm-hmm. I want to verify that, because, okay, you know, when we stand up and we tell council that, you know, I don't want somebody coming back later and say, ah, you got that.
Okay. I want to clarify something. You could do it for 1 year, but what I'm telling you is that financially you're setting yourself up for failure for the next year, because whatever you assign one time, when it's really a reoccurring expenditure, you got to come up with that.
No,
money.
You can't. I agree. We can't do it for salaries because that is recurring. But I just want to, you know, last year we had some one-time spending that we were able to do that, and then so we could give, you know. So I just want to be sure that we don't have one-time spending that we could use that for, and then have funds for.
Okay, and then, you know, let me.
That's a very important question to get an answer for right there. Because if there is something out there that we could use one-time money for, then that has the potential of freeing up dollars, right, that could go toward a salary increase. I mean, that is an extremely key question to make sure, because Mr. Eby is right. If we don't have this fine-tuned right here, then that person is going to come back and say, well, what happened? Why? Yep. And we need to make sure we're right there on that page to be able to do that.
Okay, if we could turn to slide 30, I just want to reference the what we have identified right now. A number of these items on here, none of them are salaries or benefits, but many of them are reoccurring. And so take a look, textbooks, okay, that's one. We definitely have to have money for textbooks in the future. Trustee commissions, we definitely have to pay the trustees. So, I mean, I had to stretch to get this list to balance the budget. So I'm pretty confident but I will go back and check at your request.
I'm sure you're right, but I mean, when we get up there in front of city council, you know, somebody's going to challenge us, and we want to raise our hand and say, we have done everything that we can do, and the only way that we can get a raise for our staff is to increase the maintenance of effort, which I think is absolutely right, but I want to be able to say that and not have somebody challenge it and find some little loophole in there.
One thing that's not on here is travel, and to some extent you could cut a lot of travel, but some travel is required as well, so that's kind of a gray area.
Ms. Eagle.
Well, Ms. Gagliano, I think, covered what I wanted to say, but I wanted to remind everybody that there's such a thing as items that we can call technically non-recurring, like textbooks, but who here thinks that we're not going to have to buy textbooks next year and the year after and the year after that? So there are things that legally, technically, we can call non-recurring, but they're not. We know they're recurring, and we've already shifted enough of those kinds of things, like instructional equipment, like textbooks, like technology temporary help, like trustee commissions, that we know we're going to need to spend some dollars in that category again next year and the year after. We can get away with calling it one-time money, but to keep doing it year after year, we're just digging a hole that's eventually going to get too deep to climb out of.
We're there.
Ms. Marshall.
Yeah, so, and thank you, because I've had some one-off question and answer conversations with some of our administrators already on the topic, but I think my concern, and first and foremost, I think we need to reward people for the job they do, and we have to reward them over time with salary increases. So that's my bottom line. I think the strategic way we staff directly, however, impacts our ability to do that over time. So we've made strategic choices in the way we staff to deliver our vision of excellence, right? So our vision is to provide an excellent, exceptional education for every one of our students from pre-K all the way through high school. That is exactly as it should be. As I understand it, our strategy to deliver that over years has been to staff with experience, and relatively extensive experience in some cases, to the extent that I don't believe we hire a vast number of truly new teachers meaning less than 5 years in the classroom. I think that's a choice. It may be a choice that we continue to make, because if we can do some strategic analysis on that and figure out what, I guess my question is, over time, what are our other strategic options for delivering excellence in education in a way that provides us a more balanced staffing as far as experience is concerned? Because I think my concern strategically is we're missing an opportunity to teach young teachers and to mentor young teachers in the way we do things here. We have continuously for decades delivered excellence. That's terrific. I think we owe the city a plan for the way we can strategically do that sustainably. And my concern is, if we stay with that strategy, we are signing up for knowing that we're going to have shortfall into perpetuity. Because ultimately, we're throwing a salary that's out of balance with what we have to deliver it with. So I guess I'm concerned that it's time for some strategic evaluation. As I understand it, that's on the horizon as a part of our Lean Frog work. And Six Sigma, that whole project will deliver some of it, but it may be time to start prioritizing that as far as Lean Frog's work, to make sure that as we go back to the city, we can say, we have this problem, we know we've had this problem every blessed year, but here's what we're doing to correct that strategically so that we can begin to use our funds in a more efficient way. Mr. Lay, I had this conversation with you the other night. I want the Steve Reddicks of the world to have the baby teachers under wing, okay? I want the Bruce Lays of the world and the Chris Laytons of the world. I mean, I can name off, Jennifer Gregory's the world. I'm sorry if I didn't name your name. It's not lack of love.
We'll give you 30 minutes.
I can spout them, right? But as I look at our communities, I look at the teachers we have in the classroom who are phenomenal. I would like to pass that on to younger teachers rather than having to integrate folks who've been 10 years in another school system who don't necessarily represent who we are, and we're still going to have it. And so I think having some of that and that may be a crappy idea, so I will just own that for what it's worth, but I would at least like to have the strategic conversation to understand what are the other strategic choices we could make that might be more sustainable. Speech over. Thank
you. I think you have great comments there, Ms. Marshall, and as we talked briefly after the last meeting, that was one of our last meetings with Lean Frog, strategy moving forward from what we have already done. And then what we talked about is having a retreat with the board, sharing what the work that has been done, and then getting some guidance from the board to say, moving forward, here are some ideas we have. Take the temperature of the board, and are we on the right track before we go do this study? But have your input on that and to look at everything that's available and what we want to study, what indicators do we need to look at, and involve Lean Frog in that. In that conversation, because there's a lot of truth to what you just said. And as far as staffing goes, I say this every time I get a chance in front of the city manager. You know, we are now at the elementary level, and Mr. Lay can tell you, we're talking teacher staffing now. You know, we don't have class sizes of 12 and 11. Those class sizes are creeping up to the maximum. So we're not flush with elementary teachers. We run a middle school model. And that model looks like pretty much every other middle school model in the country. So the only way you can wring out any dollars there is say, we're going to a junior high, we're going to reduce offerings for kids. So those are options, but I don't think those are the options we want to move towards. And then at the high school level, the only way you wring out any type of FTE savings is to say, Martin, I'm reducing you 6 FTE, and what's the first thing to go? All of your singletons. Your AP courses that help hold us above all others around us, or other courses that kids really need. But in the staffing of a high school, the singletons go first. It's just what happens. So I would hate to see us do that. And I think it goes back to what is the strategy? If we want to maintain that excellence, what is our strategy going forward? So I think for the next year, we have to get that done. But we do want to invite the board. At some point, we'll tell you when that's going to be. To give us a little bit of guidance moving forward.
Karen.
Another thing that might be a potential strategy to look at to get at the salary issue that you mentioned, a couple years ago the state gave school districts the opportunity to look at their salary schedules and sort of revamp them. And many school districts have done that. It helps with your expenditure per pupil. But we could also, it's not a popular thing to look at and change, but we could also create a new schedule to grandfather new employees in on that, or do something of that nature to not impact existing employees, but it might help us use our salary dollars in a different way, so that might be a consideration.
Which could all be part of any type of study that we would move forward. If you looked at the materials we gave you, you'll see that Maryville made some changes in 14, and we made some changes as well, but chose to use it differently. But it is options, lanes, things like that. And again, not for existing staff. It would be for new staff, and of course that model would have to be accepted by the board.
Ms. McClain.
So has Lean Frog done a study of our staffing?
Yeah, help me, folks. We took some of the pieces that we knew were issues as far as job description, pay. We've done administrative assistants, secretaries. We've done tech. We've done IT tech, maintenance of operations. And I think that's all we have done at this point. So we have some information back on that so we could share that at this retreat, and then get guidance moving forward on the next areas of study that we would like to head out and do.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? Well, hearing no one else, then we will adjourn until Monday. If you think of anything between now and then, please send that directly on to the superintendent or to Karen or whomever, and we'll get questions answered and be ready to move forward on Monday. We're adjourned.